presentation, would you please welcome Debbie.
Happy New Year, everybody. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to all. My name is Debbie, and I am an alcoholic. Our fifth tradition states that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Valley Group honors this tradition by rigorously searching for the finest recovery speakers in the Western Hemisphere so that they can share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Each week, we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group's Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of May 31st, 1992. He has held service positions and done many things. When I interviewed him before the meeting, he said that he started AA when we could still smoke, and he's emptied and cleaned countless ashtrays, made coffee, cleaned coffee mugs. He's chaired a lot of meetings. He was involved in HNI. He used to attend a weekly meeting at Corcoran State Prison, which he'd like to get back to doing, but the politics of the prison don't get there. And he has sponsored many men as well. And when I asked him what his favorite AA motto is, he said, live and let live. So, may I have you look, please, without any further ado, the Outstanding Speaker of Week award is to Randy R. from Corcoran. Give him a warm welcome. That's really great.
Thank you.
Hello everyone, my name is Randy. I am an alcoholic. And this is certainly a big surprise and quite an honor. Rumor had it, they told me when I arrived a little bit early that I was going to receive some kind of an award tonight. And I thought they were kidding me, but as it turned out, they were serious. Most of you in here, I don't know. I do know maybe all around a half a dozen or possibly up to 10 people in here. One person I know is back there with that last poll, Bob, that just celebrated 11 months, I believe. Is that right, Bob? And Joe that got a chip for 2 years, know him. And, of course, I know Bill that invited me to be the speaker here tonight. And my spouse is here with me. She's sitting over here. She's a normie. And she puts up with me. I don't know how, but somehow she manages to do that. And I know a few other people by their faces, perhaps not by their names. The ones that I do know by their names is got a couple of guys that I've attended a lot of meetings with. Tim sitting here. And probably the guy that I know the very best is Tommy S. Tommy and I have been attending the same meeting for approximately a year and a half. And in the scheme of real life, you know, excluding being alcoholics and not thinking about Alcoholics Anonymous, we're about as different as two people can be, I suppose. He's Irish, Catholic. I'm not. Of course, being Catholic, you know, and Irish, he's a big Notre Dame fan. He has the gall to believe that Notre Dame's going to beat Alabama Monday night in the national championship game. And I think they will have a very good chance, I really do. I don't think Alabama's faced the kind of defense that Notre Dame has. It should be a good game. I'm looking forward to watching that game on the television. I am pretty much of a political junkie, and I probably kept up with politics way more last year than any other year in my entire life. Probably the reason for that is I was retired for the entire year. I retired in July of 2011, and I got interested in it in college. I majored in business administration, but I had a minor in political science. In fact, I only liked 1 hour of having a double major, also in political science, so I got interested in it back then. And so I spend a lot of time watching cable news, and they keep you up to date on what's happening throughout the country, throughout the world, and I've taken a great interest in that. It's dangerous for me in a way, because everybody, I suppose, that enjoys politics even a little bit, you know, they have their political opinions. I certainly have mine. And sometimes I get really irritated about what the government does or does not do. And I think my wife would back me up on this. I get a little bit resentful about it sometimes. And I have to guard against that, because in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that resentment is the number one cause of an alcoholic relapsing. And I believe that with all my heart. I really do. I relapsed twice before I made the program work for me. And I'll get into that in just a minute. I'm not going to talk any more about being a political junkie. That's not what I'm here for. What I'm here for is to share my experience, strength, and hope with you as it relates to alcoholism. And I'll be honest with you, I have not ever been a big fan of speaker meetings. I've probably attended fewer of them than any other brand of meeting. However, I have been invited on several occasions to speak at speaker meetings. And I remember the first one that I ever spoke at. I had been sober for less than a year, and I was visiting a cousin in Little Rock, Arkansas. I found a men's meeting. I showed up early and got to talking with the guys outside the church there where the meeting was. And I told them that I was visiting there from California. I lived in Santa Cruz at that time. And I had less than a year of sobriety. And so this one guy said, "Well, great. I'm really glad that you're here." He said, "The guy that was going to be our speaker called me and can't show up. You are going to be our speaker for tonight." And I thought, ooh, wee. And I knew that some of those guys had double-digit years of sobriety, and there I had less than a year. And the meeting was an hour and a half, and they said, "You know, speak about half of that, and then we'll have question and answer, discussion, whatever, for the other half." And you know, I was, to start with, when I first got up there in front of the group, I felt like the head coach of a major football team, a major university, that the press was interviewing one Saturday, right before a game. They said, "Well, coach, are you nervous about today's game?" He said, "Nervous? Meaning nervous?" He said, "No, I'm not nervous. Why you ask?" And they said, "Well, you're standing in the water bucket." So that's kind of the way I felt. But now that I do have a bit of sobriety behind me, in fact, I've got 20 years, 7 months, and 1 day Thank you. I want to emphasize that one day, because I see that many of you have one day. One guy, I think, said he had 36 hours. Others have got, several got less than 30 days. Well, I remember what that was like. Even though it's been a long time ago, I remember very well what that was like. And I remember how I did not want to be an alcoholic. I thought being an alcoholic was deplorable. I thought it was lack of willpower, lack of character. To me, an alcoholic was a guy on Skid Row in L.A., you know, with a bottle of drip of wine in his hand, begging for money to get more wine with. And I didn't want to be like that. So the very first meeting that I went to, I've always been the kind of person that I tried to visualize what something would be like. And so I thought, well, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, when I get in there, it'll probably be a bunch of old men, real old men. And they will all gather around me and pray for me and say, go and drink no more, and that'll be it. Well, those of us that have any length of sobriety behind us know that it's not like that at all. Not at all. This is something where that nobody ever tells you to go and drink no more. You know, I tell everybody that if Alcoholics Anonymous was a college or a university, it would be a university of continuing education, because we continue to learn. Back to that one day of sobriety. Those of you that have been sober today, you've got the same length of sobriety that I have today. I didn't drink today because I made sure that my spiritual condition was as such that I had no desire to drink. I can't guarantee that I won't drink tomorrow, but hopefully I won't. That my spiritual condition tomorrow will be such that I won't drink. And I think that will happen. I hope it'll happen. But we don't have any guarantees on that. And that's why that we should stay active in the program, do what the program tells us to do. So with that, since we do have so many that are brand new, and if you've got less than 30 days, you're probably not going to understand at all what AA is all about or what it tries to do, because at this stage of your life, what you're thinking about is, I want to quit drinking. And you do that with help from other alcoholics and by doing some reading in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and coming to these meetings. And that's what it's all about in order to stay sober. But I understand where you've been and what got you here. I started drinking at a pretty early age. I can't remember exactly how early, but I can remember getting real drunk at age 15. It took 4 12-ounce cans of beer to get me extremely drunk, and I threw up so bad that I swore off at age 15 forever. I'm never going to drink again. How many times has an alcoholic told himself that? I'm just going to have one more drink. Well, that doesn't work for me. One drink's too many and 1,000 drinks ain't enough. And so I continue to drink. I was dating a girl in high school, and I didn't even realize how much I was drinking. And she finally told me, she said, every time that you come to pick me up to go out with me, you're either drunk or you're drinking. And she said the next day that we have, If you're drinking, don't bother to come. So I never went back. I like to drink better than I like her. Shows you how sick we get. And alcoholism is a progressive disease. It went on from there and progressed where I drank more and more over time. And the first time I went to college, I flunked out because I spent more time drinking than I did studying. So I thought, well, I'll drop out, and didn't know what I wanted to do, so I invested in the Navy. Wound up with the medical department in there, and I was stationed at the U.S. Naval Hospital in Charleston, South Carolina, and wound up with night duty. On night duty, we had to man a big ward in the hospital. I had a big medical ward, and I had to look after that ward for 10 hours. We went on duty at 9 p.m. and got off at 7 a.m. And they would let us off each day. When we got off duty at 7 a.m., we would go into town, and we had to be back by 2 p.m. That gave us 7 hours to sober up, because they knew that we all drank. And so by 9 p.m., we'd be ready to go back on duty. But I remember one day there in Charleston, we were all down on Market Street there in a bar. By noon, everybody was glassy-eyed drunk, you know. We had this one old boy named Foley. He was from North Carolina. Anyway, Foley staggered down the sidewalk, wrapped his arm around a telephone pole, and proceeded to urinate on the sidewalk. And this little old lady came by. She looked like she was the epitome of Southern aristocracy. And there in Charleston, we have a huge naval base and also an Air Force base. I don't think the Army has anything there. That lady looked at me, and she said, "My, isn't that terrible?" She said, "Is that boy in the Navy?" I said, "No, ma'am, he's in the Army." So that shows you how smart we get with our drinking. And it went on from there. When I got out, I did go back and finish college. Got a job in civilian life, wound up in corporate management. I had a good job with a good income, very good expense account, and I got by with working about 1 to 1.5 days a week. The rest of the time I was in a bar drinking off of the company, off of my expense account. So guess what happened? I drank more and more and more and more. That's an alcoholic's dream. Time to drink, company paying for it. Ooh, what a deal. And, of course, that made my alcoholism worse. So finally, one day when I was hungover like a champ, my first wife said, she was a little bit on the loud side, and when she got mad, she'd get even louder. I was hungover so bad that every time my heart would beat, my head would throb. And so she screamed at me, asked me if I was an alcoholic. I said, "Yes, yes, I'm an alcoholic." And I would admit it to being Satan if I'd had to. To get her to shut up. Anyway, I picked out a meeting there in Santa Cruz. Out of a paper like this. And it turned out that meeting was almost directly across the street from the bar that I hung out in a lot. And I thought, man, I don't want to go to that AA meeting. I want to go to that bar. I need a drink. I didn't want a drink. I needed one. I thought, now, if I do that, I'll wind up drunk, and then she'll be madder than ever. So I went to the meeting, and of course that didn't work out. And for you newcomers, I'll tell you why it didn't work out. I went because she wanted me to go. I didn't go because I wanted sober up. I wasn't through drinking. So needless to say, I attended a few meetings. I got a guy to agree to be my temporary sponsor. And I didn't have sense enough to know that there was more than one meeting in Santa Cruz County. Even back at that time, there was 168 meetings a week in that little county. Santa Cruz is party town, and for some of us, the party never ended. And so, needless to say, I got to thinking, well, a lot of these people in there had hit very low bottoms, and they would talk about stuff that they had done when they were drinking. And I thought, well, I've never done anything like that. I'm not like that at all. And then I got paranoid, and I said, oh, my. They will find out that I'm not an alcoholic and kick my ass out of here, and it will be embarrassing. I try not to use vulgarities, and I just did there. I'll pull a Larry the Table Guy. Table. Larry the Cable Guy. Lord, I apologize for that. That's what he says. Anyway, I continued to drink for about, best I can remember, a couple more years. And the alcoholism kept getting worse and worse and worse. Finally, it drove me into Dominican Santa Cruz Hospital. Back then, they had a unit in there called the Adrian Center. It was a 30-day treatment center for, well, they treated alcoholics, drug addicts, and cocaine addicts. So we had quite a few in-house meetings on all three of those. And then we went outside the hospital to some meetings. They had some vans that they would take us in. So in there, we went to meetings, of course, every day. We were in classes every day, and they tried to help us with recovery and tried to steer us on the right path to recovery. In fact, we worked the first five steps in there. Well, while I was still in there, I asked this guy to be my sponsor, and he agreed to. So when I got out of the treatment center, he said, well, we're going to work the steps. He said, I need you to do step one. I said, what is this? I did the first five steps in the treatment center. He said, that's not Alcoholics Anonymous. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. You're going to do step one. I said, okay. So guess what? I did it. So that time, I stayed sober. Oh, a little over a year. I was told to not make any major changes in my life during the first year of sobriety. Well, the damage had been done, so during that first year, my first marriage and my job both went down the tubes. And so I messed around for 13 months, couldn't get another job, got depressed. I went back to Atlanta, Georgia, where I'd lived for a lot of years and worked there and was well known in the business world there. And I thought, well, you know, I need to go back over there. I can get a job over there. Well, I went over there and I got with some old buddies and hit some old watering holes and wound up drunk again. So I kind of slithered back into AA. Was very remorseful about it. I figured that everybody that knew me would be real mad at me. But they weren't. On the contrary, they showed love for me. They said, we're glad you're back in here. Many of those that don't make it back in here wind up dead. I didn't want that option. So that time, I got serious about working the AA program. So with that, I'll spend some time talking about recovery. But just before I get into that, I heard a speaker at a speaker meeting one time say that he thought that Christopher Columbus was an alcoholic. He said when he left, he didn't know where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was. And a woman financed the trip. And then there's another story about a preacher that lived in a huge white house. Well, the house needed painting. So he decides that he will paint the house. Well, he had limited funds to buy paint with. The house was a little bigger than he thought it was. So he kept buying paint thinner, putting it in that paint. He still got to run the up, so he put more paint thinner in there. When he got through, thunderstorm came up. Rain came, washed paint off the house. He looked up in the heavens and he said, Lord, what have I done to deserve this? This voice came out of the heavens and said, you have thinned. Repaint and thin no more. Now we will talk about recovery. The first step in recovery is we have to admit that we are powerless over alcohol and that our lives have become unmanageable. The first two go-arounds that I tried with AA, I didn't believe either one of those. On the third go-around, it worked for me. Then I did believe it. And I believed in each step. And we have to do, or we need to do what that book suggests that we do. The book does not say that I've ever found that those steps are mandatory at all. It says they are suggested as a program of recovery. Well, for the newcomers that haven't started on them yet, the path, the elevator to long-term sobriety is broken. You're going to have to take the steps. It's just that simple. So they're just about mandatory. And in my opinion, you need a sponsor, somebody that's got some sobriety behind them, somebody that you can relate to that'll help guide you through those steps and help get you on the right path to recovery. Again, I've never found in any of the literature whether that's mandatory, but it is strongly suggested. Everybody in AA just about talks about it. They talk about having a sponsor, or they didn't like this particular sponsor, so they got them another sponsor. And some people have admitted that they talk to their sponsor on a daily basis. The point that I want to get across to newcomers especially is there's probably no two people that works this program alike. Everybody works a little bit different program. I'm sure that that's why I failed on the first two tries, because I was trying to think that I had to work a program just like you're working your program. And if I didn't do that, I thought, well, you know, what am I doing wrong? I'm doing something wrong. Well, there's no right or wrong. You know, if you're serious about wanting to stay sober and wanting to have a better life, and once you get in to doing what Alcoholics Anonymous tells you to do, you will have a better life, because you're going to get much better over time. You're going to get much better physically. You're going to get much better mentally. You're going to enjoy life much more. Is every day for me peaches and cream now? No. I have bad days like everybody else has bad days. But I can tell you this, the good days far outnumber the bad days. And I don't want a bad day by being hungover. I'm too old for that. I might have one more drunk left in me, but I doubt if I've got one more sober enough left in me. And if I fix up a drink, I'd be on the merry-go-round again. Like I said earlier, for me, one drink's too many and a thousand ain't enough. Because the more I drank, the more I wanted. I remember after I'd been sober for 2 years, I was in between marriages then, so I was dating this woman. We were at her house, and she said, I'm going to have a beer. You want a beer? I said, I can't have a beer. You know that I'm an alcoholic and go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, you've been sober for 2 years. Aren't you cured? Not exactly. Anyway, I declined the beer. She sat there and nursed that beer for hours. In my mind, I was saying, drink that son of a bitch. Because that's what alcoholics do. I almost developed a resentment over that. But I got over it. And I think it's imperative that we go to these Alcoholics Anonymous meetings too. We need to be here. We need to relate to and talk to other alcoholics. I mentioned earlier that Tommy is Irish and Catholic, and I'm not. So the biggest thing that I can see that we've got in common is we were both sot drunks at one time. And we relate to each other on that plane. And it seems like, and I'll admit I've made a lot of friends in AA. Seems like the chemistry just meshed there. And to the extent that I don't have any brothers, I've got one sister, but if I had a brother, I don't think I would love him any more than I love that man. He is a true friend and a true gentleman. And I always enjoy being around him. So that's why I say that I think it's imperative that we come to these meetings, talk to each other, relate to each other. If we've got problems, if we're having bad problems that are hard for us to deal with, find somebody you trust and get honest with them. Tell them, you know, I'm having difficulties with this. You know, I did that and got over it. In our house, we live by the golden rule. He that has a goal makes the rule, and that's her. But when I, even today, even though I relapsed a couple of times myself, and I certainly don't recommend that to anybody, when somebody comes back in here and says that they've relapsed, I pay very close attention to them. And the one thing that you'll hear the most often as to why they went back out and drank is they'll say, I quit going to AA meetings. So I think it's crucial that we go. And I don't go because I'm afraid I'm going to drink. The obsession to drink left me many, many years ago. I never even think about it anymore. But I think I have an obligation to try to give back what's been graciously given to me. We never know when we're going to do something or say something that's going to help another alcoholic. If I can help one person stay sober and have a better life, it's more than well worth the effort. I'd rather have that than to have a ton of money. Believe me, I would. It means more to me. Because I know how alcoholics suffer. The big book alludes to that. It doesn't say for those who may have suffered. It says for the alcoholic who still suffers. So the founding fathers knew that all of us suffered. And what I did manage to sober up, I wasn't working. I had a lot of time. I went to a lot of AA meetings. I had a sponsor. I sponsored some people. I chaired a lot of meetings. I learned new things. I learned that denial is not a river in Egypt. And I did a lot of different service work, a lot of things for people. And that makes you feel better. And when I was drinking, I didn't do anything good for anybody. All I was interested in was that next drink. I had a college professor who got to talking about liquid assets. To me, liquid assets was having plenty of booze on hand to drink. So, I guess the big thing I want to try to impress upon you is to get with the program, work it to the best of your ability. And I think one of the big things on those two relapses that I had trouble with was the willingness to go to any length to stay sober. I discovered when I finally did get sobered up that I wasn't doing that. And with all that time on my hands, I remember one 4th of July getting the Declaration of Independence down and reading it. And in that, they promise us those inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The founding fathers knew that they couldn't guarantee happiness. They only guaranteed the pursuit of it. And then right at the end of it, to get what they wanted, they pledged their lives, their liberty, and their sacred honor, and their fortunes to each other. And I thought, that's going to any lengths for a person to get what they want, to get what they believe in. And I thought, if they're that dedicated, they will go to those lengths to accomplish that. I mean, they literally laid their lives on the line. One of them said, if we don't all hang together, we will surely hang separately. So with that, we're out of time, so I will close her out. Thank you very much. Thank you, Randy.